Well, I'm not sure who Jason was talking about, but I'm here tonight, and I'm glad to be with you guys. Man, what a buildup. Hey, I tell you what, as we, I brought my daughter Ella Grace with me today, took her out of school for a special daddy-daughter trip, and as we crossed the hill over Carl T. Jones and come into the valley, I felt like we were coming home. And it's so good to be here with all of you tonight, and so thank you. This is a huge honor for me to come and to be with you tonight. I hope you know that. Alicia and I, we love this church. We love many of you. Many of you raised us, all right? Let's just be honest. When we came here, we didn't know anything, and we don't know much now, but whatever we know, we learned here, and we accredit that to many of you in this room, and many we've gotten to see already, and many I hope to see after this, but know that I come tonight in great humility, but feeling very, very honored to come and to share a word with you from the Word, right? And so tonight's going to be a special night for me, and I hope it'll be one for you as well. I've been praying about tonight. I've been praying for you as I step into this moment, because it's a big deal to get to open the Word of God before you. And I know you have many gifted people like my brother Jason here and like Lee and others who do that so well every week. And so what an honor. Whom shall I fear? Man, we got a lot to be afraid of. I remember 15 years ago when I walked into the office for the first time at Mayfair as a youth minister, and I came in and, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I walked in and I'm wearing my dress slacks and my dress shoes, and they're really uncomfortable, and I don't like shoes anyway, and my dress socks, and I got on my white button-down shirt. I didn't wear a tie because it wasn't Sunday, and I wasn't going to go that far. But I walked in like I knew what I was doing. The beach retreat had just ended, and it was great. We had driven from Nashville, Alicia and I, that weekend, Memorial Day weekend, all the way down to Gulf Shores for our first Mayfair event, our first thing that we did as a youth minister for this church, and came back, and that next week we'd walk into the office. I remember walking in and making small talk with Miss Diana Gill, who we all know and love, and, you know, trying to talk about how great the weekend was. And I walk into my office, and I don't know what to do. I mean, I've prepared my entire life at this point to be youth minister, but I've never been one. You know, no, you don't really know what to do, and so your first day especially. But I walk in, I sit down, I got a computer there, I got a desk, got a fancy chair, and I sit down. The first thing I do is like, man, I got to get these shoes off. They are killing my feet. These dress shoes my wife made me wear to church work is just terrible. So I take them off, and I get behind my computer, and I start pounding away, trying to pretend like I'm working, you know, making up a Devo for Wednesday night or something, transparencies, remember those things? And this is back in the day, man. And I got to run to the printer to grab it off and see what happens. So I do that, and I'm coming back to my office, and before I get there, Brother Gary Bradley walks in. Of course, he's got his nice dress shoes on, his nice slacks, his nice white shirt, his nice tie on. He's dressed to the hilt, and he's like, hey, Corey, man, glad you're here. Hey, come on into my office, let's talk. I'm like, what? I don't have my shoes on. Now, I can't say that out loud to Gary Bradley. I mean, you know, this is a big deal. I mean, as far as I know, the Godhead is, you know, God, Jesus, Holy Spirit, Gary Bradley. And this is like day one. I don't have any shoes on, and I'm following him into his office, and I sit there, and I'm just like so embarrassed because I'm like, what am I doing? I felt petrified. Man, I don't know about you, but, you know, in life, there are just lots of things for us to be afraid of, you know? There really are. And over the last, I don't know, 30 some odd years of my life, it seems like every year there's a new thing I've learned about, a new way that fear has even crept into my life. And I see it with our students that I work with all the time. I see it at our church. I see it in their parents. I see it in the life of our church, and you probably see it in the life of this church. But fear, I believe, is one of Satan's greatest weapons to attack us. Just think about that. Is it not? Is fear not one of Satan's greatest weapons that he uses to forge against us? Many people I know, including myself, if I'm being completely wide open tonight, we're fearful of the future. We're afraid of the unknown. We don't know what's going to happen next, right? We don't know if this job is going to last. We don't know what the doctor's going to say when we go back. We don't know what's going to happen with that relationship. We don't know if our kids are going to keep their faith when they get to college. We don't know. It hasn't happened yet. And the fear of the unknown, the fear of what may come, man, that can be paralyzing. Man, a lot of people I know, they're terrified. They're petrified. They're fearful of rejection. You know, social media has turned this desire for acceptance into a craze. And if we don't feel, if that void isn't filled in our lives, man, we go insane sometimes. I mean, I see it all the time. You do too. We post things, people post things, and they try to come up with clever ways to say things, or they post something that's a little bit trivial, but maybe will make you a little bit angry. They'll post pictures, and they want to see how many likes, how many comments, how many retweets they can get. And all of it is this drive, because we don't want to be rejected. We want to be accepted. We want to be liked. And we want a lot of likes. We want a lot of comments. We want a lot of attention. And it's crazy to me on one level, because we long for acceptance. And we live for acceptance. And sometimes I want to shake people and say, you have already been accepted by the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. You have already been accepted through Jesus by the God of the universe who made you and who created you and who formed you. Church, we should live from acceptance, not for it. Amen? This is who we are. We are the people of God. And yet we are so driven for people to notice us. And the whole time God is hovering over us and he's just saying, you are loved. You are accepted. You do belong. You have a place at my table. But we're afraid of rejection. Man. It's a killer, you know? Some of us have big giants in our life, and like David standing before Goliath, you know, we're afraid of these giant situations that rise up in front of us, except we don't know what to do. You know, we stand there dumbfounded. And I don't want to make light of it, because the situations are real and the problems are serious, and sometimes it's really daunting. It's a task before us to grapple with the realities that come in this world, in this life, in this broken world that we live in as a result of sin. We live here and we have to deal with these things that come our way, and they are giants in our lives. And you know what I'm talking about. It may be that impending divorce, or that kid caught in addiction, or that situation at work. I don't know. I mean, there is so much, is there not, to be afraid of. And in those moments, when we're really afraid, when we're really worried, when we're really concerned, we start asking questions. Man, I see this in our students so often. They are so quick to bail on God. Because the first sign of trouble or suffering or hard times come, and the questions, and you know them, I don't have to say them. Where are you, God? Why is this happening to me, God? How long is this going to last, God? What's going on? Can you hear me? Are you there? Is anybody out there? And we ask. We cry out to God. And we begin to wonder, don't we? Is anybody really there? Is God who he says he is? Is he real? And his parents and his grandparents, we're working as hard as we know how, are we not, to pass on this faith to our children. But it's never been more difficult, I'm convinced, to pass it on, to convince them of what we believe, that God is exactly who he says he is. But I want you to know that if that's where you are, or if you've ever been there, I don't want you to feel like, man, you're alone in that, or you're the first, or you're the last, right? Because you're not. You're not. We have all been there. I want to show you a picture of my family real quick. I only do this because you guys know me, and a lot of you do, and you know my family, and so I wanted to show this to you. When we moved away 5 years ago, Emma didn't exist, so you may not know her. Sorry about that. I should have brought her tonight, but she is a mess, and so this may be recorded, but she didn't know how to do a podcast yet, so it's all good. She is crazy. She's 3 years old, and she is the life of the party, and she is insane. Ella Grace is with me tonight. She's up in class. I hope you'll probably see her running around the gym in a little bit with a pink dress on. She is too cute. Those eyes are killer, and I'm starting a gun collection, so if any of you guys have guns you want to pass on, your daughters have graduated, let me know. And then I got Will, who's the ball player, who loves baseball, which is comical to me because I never liked baseball, and then he was born with a ball and a bat in his hand, and I don't know what happened there. I think it's God's curse, but it's okay. We enjoy it. And then my beautiful wife, Alicia, who has just started a job as a K-3 teacher at the school that's the church we work at is on the same campus as the school Greater Atlanta Christian School, and she's a K-3 teacher this year, so she is in a room with like 14 3-year-olds, so we're going to pray for her at the end of tonight's time together. She has an assistant that helps her, but she's loving that, and so that's my family. They all wanted to be here tonight, but I can only take one, and it was Gracie's turn, or Ella Grace. She's changed her name back to the original Ella Grace. So if she corrects you tonight, just go with it. It was her turn to take a trip with Dad, so she's here tonight. And these guys, I mean, they're special. And you guys, if you have family, you know, if you have children, you know, it's special. And as moms and dads, what do we worry most about? Our kids, right? Our kids. But if you've ever felt afraid, if you've ever felt alone, if you've ever felt worried or concerned or caught up in fear and wondering, where is God when it comes to your kids? And I want you to know you're not alone. In a lot of ways, Alicia and I are there right now, and I'll share a little more in a few minutes, but right now we got a thing going on with Will. And I'll just be honest, there's a lot of worry, and like I know how the story ends, but we're in the middle of it, right? And there's fear, and there's worry, and there's wonder, what's going to happen? And are we praying? You better believe we're praying, right? Man, we pray. Man, we hit our knees hard when it comes to our kids, right? Man, we do. We do. But tonight, I want to share with you guys this psalm. Before we read it, though, I want to give you a little background. We're gonna read a Psalm of David, Psalm 27. It's probably one you've read before if you've ever been in the same boat we're talking about tonight. I'll be honest. There's a couple of places David could have been when he wrote this. There's a couple of different times in life when he could have written this, and scholars disagree. And so I'm going to pick one, is what I did. The one that I like the best, the one I think is true, and it may or may not be. It's really a little bit irrelevant and trivial because the same point is made. But I have a feeling that David probably wrote this psalm around the same time that he was running for his life. If you remember the story at all, as David came up through the ranks of Israel's army, he became a real mighty man, a valiant warrior. His popularity was on the rise. And a lot of you know David's story, and you know what they said about David in the Bible, you know? Just an awesome, awesome man of faith, incredible man of God, incredible warrior for God and for God's people. But as his popularity rose, King Saul, man, he got really upset about that, right? The attention wasn't on him anymore, it was on David, and man, he grew jealous. So much so that he sought to take David's life, right? So let me just read a couple of verses. These aren't on the screen, but just listen close. This is at the end of 1 Samuel 20, 21 and into 22. And I want you to hear what is said about David, because we think of David and we think man after God's own heart, writer of incredible songs for God, you know, great man, hero of faith. 1 Samuel 21, verse 10. So David escaped from Saul and went to King Achish of Gath. But the officers of Achish were unhappy about his being there. Isn't this David, the king of the land, they asked? Isn't he the one that the people honor with dances and they sing? Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. David heard these comments and was very afraid of what King Achish of Gath might do to him. So David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. David, hero of faith, man after God's own heart, hero of the Bible, was very afraid of what some man might do to him, so he ran and he hid in the cave. And before we get too judgmental, how many of us have been to that same cave? Right? How many of us have been to that exact same cave? And this is where I want you to be tonight. I want you to crawl into the cave with David. And I either want you to think back to a time in your life, or maybe you're living it right now, where you're hiding out because something is coming against you. And in a room this size with this many people, I don't know what that is. But I know. I know. This is what I know about you. Something is coming against you. Something is coming against you. Because we have an enemy, and he is real, and he is relentless. And he has nothing to lose and everything to gain, and he never stops. There is something coming against you. And there are times when we become very afraid, and we have to run and hide in a cave with David. Because you know what? We're human. And that's what humans do, okay? So cut yourself some slack. That's what we do. Sometimes we get afraid. Let's just be honest. And I don't know what's coming against you. I don't know what it is in your life right now that is weighing heavy on your heart. I don't know what the situation is or what the problem is or what the illness is or what the relationship is, what the job is. I don't know, but I know in all of our lives the enemy is real and he is relentless. And he has nothing to lose and everything to gain. And he never stops. And sometimes we have to run and we have to hide in a cave because we're afraid of what might happen. But it was in this moment, or maybe a moment like this, that David penned these words. And I just want to read them to you because they're beautiful. And sometimes we write words and sometimes we read words, and if we're honest, they're not true in the moment, but we want them to be true about us. It's like in worship tonight, we were singing some words on the screen, and maybe the words were true for you, but maybe you just wanted them to be true for you, right? Sometimes that's where we are. Maybe that's what happened as David penned these words, these beautiful words in Psalm 27, when he said, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. So why should I be afraid? The Lord is my fortress, protecting me from danger. So why should I tremble? When evil people come to devour me, when my enemies and foes attack me, they will stumble and fall. Though a mighty army surrounds me, my heart will not be afraid. Even if I am attacked, I will remain confident. The one thing I ask of the Lord, the thing I seek most, is to live in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, delighting in the Lord's perfections and meditating in his temple. For he will conceal me there when troubles come, and he will hide me in his sanctuary. He will place me out of reach on a high rock. Then I will hold my head high above my enemies who surround me. At his sanctuary, I will offer sacrifices with shouts of joy, singing and praising the Lord with music. Hear me as I pray. Oh, Lord, be merciful. Be merciful and answer me." And I love this. "My heart has heard you say, come and talk with me." My heart responds, "Lord, I am coming. Do not turn your back on me. Do not reject your servant in anger. You've always been my helper. Don't leave me now. Don't abandon me, O God of my salvation. Even if my father and my mother abandon me, the Lord, he will hold me close. So teach me how to live, O Lord. Lead me along the right path, for my enemies are waiting for me. Do not let me fall into their hands, for they accuse me of things I've never done. With every breath, they threaten me with violence. Yet I am confident I will see the Lord's goodness while I am here in the land of the living. Wait patiently for the Lord. Be brave and courageous. Yes, wait patiently for the Lord." That word wait, I wish I could break down the whole psalm for you, but that word wait in the Hebrew language, kavah, it literally means like Christmas Eve, like wait expectantly, waiting with great hope, looking, knowing that something is coming on the horizon and it will be grand. This is what David says, that we who were under attack, who were in the cave, should wait expectantly, look longingly towards God. Not because of who we are or of what we've done, because of who he is and what he can do. Because of his steadfast love, his chesed love, his faithfulness that is unfailing and never ending. So I told you we're in the middle of this thing with Will. A few weeks ago, Alicia's starting back to school and gets the phone call on the drive in that we've got to get Will into the doctor ASAP because they had taken the sample from his ear, the spot off, and This is really, really rare in kids. But it looked like it could be, and it can be. We don't know yet. We're still waiting, the whole waiting thing. That's fun, isn't it? Could be melanoma, which for an 8-year-old kid, that's a pretty scary diagnosis, right? And so they said, hey, we want to bring him back in for a second biopsy and send him to this melanoma specialist here in Atlanta who's top of his field. He's going to take your case and look at it, and he wants to see your son and take this biopsy. So this is one of those dad things because mom can't handle it, right? And so I get Will out of school that day, and I take him down there to see the doctor, and this doctor is, like, super awesome. He's just the best guy ever. I really love. I feel like God led us to this man of God, and he's taking care of our son. And we go in there, and my son Will, he's a brave little kid, don't get me wrong, but he's got a little bit of anxiety going on, especially about this whole deal. You know, somebody's going to cut part of my ear off. That's not a fun thing to talk about. And we get into the room, and it's getting nearer to the time when they're going to do this, take this biopsy, which for you or me might be uncomfortable, but it's doable. For Will, it was sheer terror in his face. And so everybody, myself, a couple of doctors are in the room. We're trying to calm him down and say the right things and get him into the right space, the right place where we can do this thing. And it's just not working. And I'm trying to, now I'm trying to physically hold my son. He's 8 years old. And not only is he strong, but the adrenaline's kicking in, right? And he is like, I mean, I gave the kid like 2 times the dose of Benadryl before we went that morning, just kind of maybe put him to sleep. No effect. You know, adrenaline is in full throttle, and he is like Hercules, you know, Samson kind of strength. And he's like, I'm trying to hold him. It ain't happening. Because he is, sheer terror has struck my child. And he's crying. And he's terrified. And he breaks away from me. And now he's running around the room away from me and the other doctors. And I'm like, what's going on? You know, this is not my child. He's like demon possessed. I don't know what to do. He's running around crazy. And then the doctor finally says, hey, Corey, why don't you step outside to the waiting area? And maybe we can try this without you. And I know what he's thinking. You know, if you can get dad out of the room, maybe it'll change the equation. And I didn't know if it would work, but at this point, I'm like, I don't know what else to do. But as soon as Will heard those words that daddy might leave, you know what happened? He stopped running away from me, and he ran to me. And that boy latched on, like, with a death grip I've never seen. And he wouldn't let me go. So now, man, I'm like dying a million deaths inside. I'm taking him to the table. He's wrapped around me like white on rice. And I'm trying to get over there, and I'm trying to peel him off. And he's crying, and he's screaming. And I finally get him off of me, and I'm trying to whisper and smile and say the right things outside. Inside, I'm screaming too. Because I can't handle this. This is too much for any parent to endure. And I'm trying to peel him off and get him on the table because I know what's best for him. It's not what's comfortable for him. It's not what he wants. But this is absolutely what has to happen for us to know what we have to do to heal my boy. And so I'm trying to peel his body off of me all the while he's screaming in terror. And the doctors are helping, and they are godsends. They are wonderful people who God has put in our path to help us in this moment. Finally, I get him off of me, and I'm walking out of the room. And you know, some of you parents know, this is the longest walk of my life. It's 10 feet away, but I can't make it to the door hardly because he's screaming, Daddy, don't leave me. And I open the door, and I step outside, and I close the door the whole time. He's screaming, Daddy, don't leave me. What do you do? I close the door, and he thinks I'm gone, but I am right outside the door for my boy. He thinks I left, but I couldn't be any closer physically if I tried. And I wonder sometimes if this isn't exactly how we feel with God. Because we're lost in the moment, and we are caught up in such terror and such fear because what's going on is real, and what's going on is hard. And we are very afraid, and we should be. And we're crying out to God. And we're saying, where are you, God? Don't leave me, like David said. Don't abandon me. And we wonder if God hears. We wonder if he even cares. And the whole time his heart is breaking because he's not far away. He's right outside the door. Tonight, if that's where you are, man, I just want to whisper this truth to your soul. God knows. God knows. Cares. God is intimately aware of the details of your life. And he deeply cares. If he knows how many hairs are on your head, do you not think he knows what happened today? If he sees even the sparrow fall, do you not think he knows what's going on at your home? God knows, and God cares. The love of God will protect you from absolutely nothing, but his presence will sustain you through absolutely everything. And that may sound shocking, but I believe if you think back over the story that is your life, you will find it true. But the love of God will protect you from absolutely nothing, but his presence, it will sustain you through absolutely everything. And sometimes we wonder why we have to suffer and go through hard times. I'll know more one day. I'll know more fully one day, but now I know this. Sometimes suffering is just God's quickest way to get us from where we are to where he wants us to be. Because where he wants us to be, where he wants you to be, where he wants me to be, is right next to him. Walking with him all of our days, fully reliant on him. And you wonder, well, why? Well, it's for your good. Why do you go through difficult things? It's for your good, and it's for his ultimate glory. And you better believe he could come to the rescue a lot sooner and save you when things were a little bit easier, but then he would only get a little glory. Seems like God has this pattern, at least in my life and maybe in your life. I think it's true in the story of the Bible as well, that he comes in at the last moment and he saves the day. But you know what happens? He doesn't get a little glory. He gets a lot of glory. Because then you can say, only God could have done this. There's no other way to explain it. And then you become a living testimony. It was for your good and it was for his ultimate glory. And so tonight, I want you to know that in this world, there is much to be afraid of. But you have nothing to fear. Because you are sons and you are daughters of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. You are heirs. You are citizens of heaven. And your heavenly Father is never far away. In fact, he's always near. The God who seems so far away is really close. Even Jesus on the cross cried out, my God, where are you? Why have you forsaken me? I can promise you, God the Father was not far away then, and he's not far away tonight. So may you be encouraged, and may you be full of hope that you, yes, you, doesn't matter what you've done or where you've been, because God's love is perfect, and there's nothing you could ever do that would make him love you less. He can't love you anymore either, by the way. His love is perfect. He loves you perfectly, and you are his sons, and you are his daughters, and he is near. So take courage. Take heart.